Okay, he didn't have to serve who was giving him his paycheck. And you know how that looks. You know, a lot of churches, the person who has the biggest say is the biggest donor. Right? That's how it works. Well, Paul eliminated that by not taking any money. Right? He had a right to be paid. He wasn't going to do it. But the amazing thing is he used his right to do what he could to reach others. Okay? So in this first part that we're going to see right here, this left him free to become a slave of all. Okay, that's the context. We're going to go through the rest of this chapter here. So verse 19. Even though I am a free man with no master, I have become a slave to all people to bring many to Christ. Okay, right there it is. He's saying he became a slave to bring as many to Christ as possible. All right. Oh, this is good. I almost forgot that. Thanks, Royce, for putting that up there. All right. This note is from Dr. Constable on soniclight.com. He says, very interesting, his approach to reaching as many people as possible. His approach to reaching as many people as possible was by serving. Rather than being put in a commanding position, well, I'm in charge, everybody listen to me. He took the position as servant. How can I serve as many people as possible to be able to make as much of Christ as possible? Okay, very interesting approach, right? You think of leadership today. Okay, leadership is about how many people you can command or control or oversee. Paul took the opposite approach. He said, okay, I'm going to try to reach as many people for Jesus as possible. The way I'm going to do it is by serving. Okay, very interesting approach. All right, verse 20. When I was with the Jews, I lived like a Jew to bring the Jews to Christ. When I was with those who followed the Jewish law, I too lived under that law. Even though I am not subject to the law, I did this so I could bring to Christ those who are under the law. All right, so we don't have this culture, so this may not make a lot of sense to us. The Jewish law was all these regulations, Old Testament regulations, essentially showing people that God is perfect, they're not, and also showing them that there's a cost for their sin, which is death. That still exists for us. Okay, that's what Paul would be telling us right now. He'd be saying, I'm guessing, you have sin. You were born a sinner. You cannot be in relationship with God because of that sin. So, as a result, there's a payment. There's a cost for that sin. It's death. And he's saying, you're either going to die and spend eternity from God, or you're going to accept a gift from Jesus, and that's his death. Then you have eternity with God. Okay? So, why would Paul be willing to subject himself to this Jewish law? And you're going to see this over and over. So I could bring to Christ those who are under the law, or as the ESV that you're holding says, that I might win those under the law. Okay? Now this is going to set up some big ideas that he's going to give us here in a couple minutes. Royce, go ahead and go to the second tab in. This is a little bit interesting here. Just to give you an idea. So we're like, okay, so Paul went under the law. Big deal. Well, this is go ahead and scroll down. Here's the 600, go ahead, keep going. You got to go faster, 613, you're at 10. Okay, Paul put himself under 613 regulations that he didn't have to be under. Okay, this is a big deal. Paul didn't have to do any of these things. So when you're starting to whine about what your day looks like as you're serving someone, okay, knock it off. Okay, it's you're here with a purpose to serve others and to become what you need to become so you can serve them to be able to make them aware of how good Jesus is. So he was willing to take on a ton of regulations that he didn't have to do. So when you read this little verse like lived like a Jew and lived under, that was a big deal. He came from that. He probably despised that to some degree because it really pushed him against God in some ways, which the law does. It makes you realize how sinful you are. But then the law is also beautiful because it brought him to Jesus. But the point is, he willingly put himself under that law. Okay? All right, next, verse 21. When I am with the Gentiles, so those are basically, there's Jews and then there's everybody else, Gentiles, who do not follow the Jewish law, I too live apart from that law so I can bring them to Christ. But I do not ignore the law of God. I obey the law of Christ. All right, so in this situation, why did he ignore the Jewish law? All 613 that several people in his environment were under. And it's, again, he says, so I can bring them to Christ. Okay, so you're starting to see what Paul's mission was. And just so you get a little introduction here, it's the same mission we're to be on. Jesus called us to the same thing, to reach as many for Christ as possible. Okay? The law of Christ is kind of an interesting idea. You don't see it mentioned much, but it makes perfect sense when you read Galatians 6:2, it says, share each other's burdens, and in this way, obey the law of Christ. So it makes perfect sense. What's Paul's attitude again? Serve. He's going to share in their burdens. He's getting in with people's lives. It's about relationships, getting to know people. How can you help them? How can you share their burden? Because we all have burdens, right? Lots of them. Okay? It's nice to have someone there. In fact, Jesus says that a lot of times he lets us suffer so that we can then go and walk with someone else who's suffering, so that we can share that burden. Okay? So Paul's saying, that's what I'm doing, even though I ignore the law, the Jewish law. Okay, 22 through 23. When I am with those who are weak, I share their weakness. For I want to bring the weak to Christ. Yes, I try to find common ground with everyone, doing everything I can to save some. I do everything to spread the good news and share in its blessings. Again, Dr. Constable makes this point. I thought this was pretty fascinating because I've experienced this myself, observing some people. And he says, this policy that Paul's saying, I'll do anything I can to save some. He's saying this policy undoubtedly led some people to conclude that Paul was inconsistent. I can understand that, right? You see, Paul, one day he has all his Jewish garb on and he's doing all the things necessary at the temple to be clean. And he's going through all this ceremonial process. And then the next day you see him eating meat that the other group said, if you do it, you're sinning. And he's sitting down doing all the things that this group said was sin. He'd be sitting back going, I can't follow what you're doing here, Paul. You're confusing me. He'd be like, well, what don't you get? I'm trying to reach everybody. I'm trying to get common ground. I'm trying to get to know them so I can share their burden, so I can serve them and let them know about Jesus. His superficial inconsistency manifested a more fundamental consistency. He did everything non-moral, meaning something that wasn't a sin, with a view to bring people to the Savior. That's interesting. I would probably sit back and judge this person. I'm saying that's not a good thing. Okay, I'd be looking at their motives like, what is going on? So anyway, very fascinating section, seeing how Paul is handling this. Okay. Verse 24, don't you realize, he kind of switches gears here, that in a race everyone runs, but only one person gets the prize. So run to win. All right, go ahead. So here's the deal. Paul's switching gears and he's getting into this athletic analogy, which is amazing how little we've changed in thousands of years, okay? And they were familiar with athletic contests, just like we are. There was the Isthmus Games, which basically was like on the off years of the Olympics. And there were the Olympic Games that occurred. And the Isthmus was in Corinth, so it was right there. So they were very familiar with competitions. And they did all different kinds of games, running, wrestling, all different things. They didn't play basketball, but probably should have. Anyway, so these games were going on. Okay, so what he was talking about, they knew. And the thing here is that the focus wasn't on competition. Because you read that and you're almost like, oh no, who's the one who wins? Right? And it says one win. But the point is, it's on self-discipline. And you're going to see that as we read the rest of the verses. It's not, so it's possible, and I hate saying this because this is like total contrary to my anti-AYSO thinking, but we can all be winners. It's the only time you're going to hear me say that. Okay? But we can be. His point isn't just one is going to win. He's saying, listen, with self-discipline, with some focus, you can get a prize. Okay? We'll talk about that. All right, here we go. I'm just going to pause for a minute because I'm going to start saying things, and if you don't get this little preface, it will confuse you. Okay, we talk constantly about the fact that your salvation is not based on anything you can do. Your salvation is based on what Jesus has done on the cross. Okay? So I am not talking about your salvation from here on out, this next 20 minutes or whatever. Okay? I'm also not talking about sanctification or anything as far as your growing goes. I'm not talking about your salvation. Okay? What I'm talking about from here on out is your self-discipline to make much of Jesus. Okay? All right. So that's there. Don't forget that because I'm going to start getting upset with you here in a minute. All right. All athletes are disciplined in their training. They do it to win a prize that will fade away. But we do it for an eternal prize. Okay. Very interesting section here. The New Living Translation says disciplined in their training. The ESV, it says exercises self-control. The NIV says everyone who competes. Okay, it's all saying this one word, go ahead, which is essentially agonize. Agonize means to struggle. Okay, now let's read this again. All athletes struggle in their training. Struggle. They go hard. I last night I watched about 40 YouTube videos. Okay, it wasn't that many, but it was a lot. I tried to find a real good one where people were training. Here's what I want you to understand. You take any top athlete. They're very good athletes. They all have one thing in common. They work their tail off. If I'm Kevin Durant. Yeah, sorry, I aged myself there. Went to KG instead of KD. Goodness. If I'm Kevin Durant, I would be like, you know what? I don't miss a shot very often. I don't think I'm going to practice. In fact, I think I'm going to take this year off and just go to games. First of all, someone had the attitude. Remember Allen Iverson? But anyway. Some of you have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm sorry. But it's funny. You watch Kevin Durant. You watch LeBron James. I think I only read one book when I was young. I hated reading. I love reading now. There's only one book I ever read. It was Walter Payton. I loved Walter Payton. Sweetness. Does anyone remember who Walter Payton is? A couple people. Walter Payton was the best running back ever. And I stuck with him when the Chicago Bears were like 3-12 and they stunk year after year. And I was like, I love Walter Payton because he goes hard. And there's one thing unique about Walter Payton at the time. I would read where guys from the NFL would go and train with him in the offseason. and they would be throwing up, getting sick because of how hard he worked. Like they physically just got sick. He was one of the first ones who would work out in the sand at the beach and just run hard. Okay, you take any athlete. LeBron James is what I was getting to. He just released a video, I think Powerade or something, where it showed his hour workout. Nonstop. Shooting, running, lifting, running, getting in the pool, swimming. Nonstop working out. You take any athlete and they struggle. They work hard. I think even golfers work hard. At one time, I mean, like John Daly and stuff, they didn't look like they work hard. But now, to be successful, they work hard. Okay. I think there's a reason why he's using this word, this analogy. If you're around sports at all, you know there's very few people who can just walk into a competition and dominate. That only lasts until you're about 12 or 13. Then the kids catch up to you. That means they're as physically big and fast as you. Now you no longer just dominate because of your gift that you've been given. Now it's who's going to work the hardest. To struggle. Any athlete in training denies himself or herself many lawful pleasures in order to gain an extra edge. Isn't that what athletes or athletics is about? Gaining that extra edge. Paul, let me find where I'm at here. The wind blew it. Listen to what Paul said again. He said, all athletes are disciplined in their training. All athletes are struggling. They do it to win a prize that fades away. Okay, let me explain that to you. These guys back then were runners that he was talking about. And they would train nonstop for 10 months for their competition that would then occur. Okay? It was actually only about a 200-meter run that he was talking about, but still, they trained hard, okay? They struggled and worked to get a little wreath on their head that was made of either celery, I'm guessing the leaves of celery, or it was made of pine branches. It lasted a couple days, 3 days. So they worked nonstop to get a 3-day prize. Now, they were getting it for the pride, though, because they were then the champion and everybody recognized them. Hey, there he goes. Yeah, hey, what's happening? All right. So, what Paul, go ahead, next one. Our struggle is for an eternal prize. Guys, look how hard people work for something that doesn't last. Now, let me try to make that clear with this analogy. You're on your deathbed. I walk in and say, hey, stinks you're going to die in a day or two. But I got $1 million here for you. Do you want it? But it's only yours. I mean, you can't take it and give it to your kids and stuff. What would you say? You'd be like, what are you talking about? I'm dying in a day. You're going to give me $1 million? I'd be like, yeah, it's yours. Okay, so that seems stupid, right? Well, let's say you have a week to live. Do you take $1 million? Okay. Well, now you got a month. Okay. My point is, do you know how long our life is according to, in comparison to eternity? A vapor. Our lives here are not even a day long. It's about 7 seconds long in comparison to eternity. But yet we're willing to work our tails off for a prize, whatever it is, that's going to last 7 seconds. Paul's saying, guys, do you know how that wreath just disappears and it's stupid that people train all day for that stupid wreath around their head? However you say it, wreath, whatever. Okay, the thing, the crown, I will say that, disposable crown. He's saying this, go for the eternal crown. Why are you messing around with this stuff that only lasts for while you're here? Go ahead. So what are these crowns? Here's five of them. The one that he's talking about right now is this imperishable crown for leading a disciplined life. Because you should be aware of these crowns. I believe that Jesus talked about this, Paul talked about it, because it was meant to be a motivator. It was meant for you to sit and go, okay, what am I going to pick? Something that's going to last for a year, a month? Or am I going to work for something that lasts for eternity? If you believe this, it's got to change your life. You got to respond to this. You're going to respond right now by either not believing me and ignoring these or changing the way you do things. That's the reality. I want to say Happy Mother's Day again, too. I'm sorry I'm getting mean and stuff. I should be doing a Mother's Day thing. But I love you. Right? Paul's like, this is so important. I don't want you to waste your time. Because I get sucked into this. I daily am thinking about, geez, I got to pay the bills. This will drive me nuts. I'm just so sick of it. I should be like, yeah, I care. I want to do well. But I don't really care because I'm only here for a little time. Then I got eternity. You got to be reminded of this because you forget. You forget. You forget. I just spit. Sorry. Crown of rejoicing. There's another crown, okay, for evangelism, discipleship, something we can all be part of. Crown of righteousness. For loving the Lord's appearance when he returns. The crown of life for enduring a trial. Crown of glory for shepherding God's flock. These are crowns that last. Go for this. Struggle for this. Okay? That's what Paul's saying right here. I'm going to read the verse one more time. All athletes struggle in their training. They do it to win a prize that will fade away, but we do it for an eternal prize. Don't forget that. Go hard, but do it for eternity. Next. So I'm going to take a little break here and ask the question, is sitting on the bench an option? Because we're doing athletics, so I was familiar with sitting on the bench growing up. My yearbook was signed to my bench buddy. So that's where it was, okay? So is that an option in this? Okay? I was little. All right. So for bench warmers, okay, I got some thoughts for you. I'm going to read some Proverbs. And then I'm going to get to what Jesus says. This is going to be a little longer than usual. It's good for you, though. Listen. Verse 6. Take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones. Learn from their ways and become wise. Though they have no prince or governor to ruler to make them work, they labor hard all summer, gathering food for the winter. But you, lazy bones, how long will you sleep? When will you wake up? A little extra sleep, a little more slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then poverty will pounce on you like a bandit. Scarcity will attack you like an armed robber. Okay. 13:4. Lazy people want much, but get little. But those who work hard will prosper. Kind of see the attitude of someone who's lazy. 21, 25, and 26. Despite their desires, the lazy will come to ruin, for their hands refuse to work. Some people are always greedy for more, but the godly love to give. What a difference in attitude. Last one in Proverbs 26:16 says, lazy people consider themselves smarter than seven wise counselors. So some of you, as I was reading this, were thinking I was stupid, and I could get seven other people up here to say the same thing, and you would think all seven of us are stupid. It might be because you're lazy. Okay? So, if you think everybody's got it wrong but you, and you got the method down on how to beat the system, it might just mean you're lazy. Okay? Let me go to Matthew. I'm going to paraphrase this. But man, this is right to the heart of it. You've heard this before. 25. So the story is, I'll read the beginning of it. Again, the kingdom of heaven can be illustrated by the story of a man going on a long trip. He called together his servants and entrusted his money to them while he was gone. He gave 5 bags of silver to one, 2 bags of silver to another, and 1 bag of silver to the last, dividing the portions to their abilities. Then he left on his trip. Okay, so the 5 took the 5 bags of silver and made a lot more silver. 2 invested it in a bank and got more silver. The 3rd guy who had 1 bag, he buried it in the ground, didn't do anything. I would say he was lazy. Okay, what does Jesus say? Then the servant with 1 bag of silver came and said, "Master, I knew you were a harsh man, harvesting crops you didn't plant and gathering crops you didn't cultivate. I was afraid I would lose your money, so I hid it in the earth. Look, here's all your money back." Okay, so you've all been given something by God. You've all been given a gift to serve others. If you have it buried and you're not using it, here's what Jesus says. The master replied, "You wicked and lazy servant. If you knew I harvested crops and didn't plant and gathered crops I didn't cultivate, why didn't you deposit my money in the bank? At least I could have gotten some interest on it." He's saying, "You lazy. Do something. Are you kidding me? This is what you did?" That's Jesus' attitude towards laziness. He can't believe it. So, is sitting on the bench, being a bench warmer, an option? I say no. If you've kind of laid out your plan, you're like, you know, this church is kind of good. I can see myself sitting here doing absolutely nothing for the next 20 years, kind of like the snack time, blah, blah. What, are you kidding me? That is not what God desires from you. He has harsh words for you. Why? Because he loves you. And I tell you what, you can go and accumulate all you want, and all it does is bring turmoil. You can go and serve others as much as you can. It's going to be hard. It's going to be a struggle, but there's joy. There's joy in that when you've poured out your life for others. Okay. All right, last part here. So I run with purpose in every step. I am not just shadow boxing. I discipline my body like an athlete, training it to do what it should do, or what it should. Otherwise, I fear that after preaching to others, I myself might be disqualified. That's not damned, it's disqualified for the prize, the crown. Okay? So you have a choice. Depend on how you go about things. Okay? So, to end it, what's your purpose? Have you put even any thought into that? What is your purpose? What are you here for? What are you doing? It boggles my mind when I hear how much time people put into fantasy football versus thinking about what their purpose is. You have a purpose. Okay? Comes down to this: to make much of yourself or to make much of Jesus. I think you can boil it down to that. What's your day look like? Is your day about building your kingdom? Or is your day about building Jesus' kingdom? Is your day about making much of you? Or is your day about making much of Jesus? Is your day about getting as many people under you to lead as possible? Or is your day about serving as many people as possible? You have a choice. Okay? Okay? Again, I'm not talking about salvation. I'm not saying you got to work your tail off to be accepted by God. That is done simply by believing. After you do that, you have a choice. What are you going to do? Are you going to truly love others by giving? Or are you going to be completely self-centered and just live a life of taking? Okay? He's saying it takes effort. It's a struggle. People are hard. I'm even hard. You must not know me very well. You'd laugh harder if you got that, if you knew me closer. But anyway. All right, I'm going to pray, and then I'll take some questions. God, thank you that you've given us this responsibility to go and make much of you. I pray we do it to the best of our ability. I pray that we do it well. The interesting thing is, I didn't read it in Matthew. To the people who did much with what you had given them, that's where you said, well done, good and faithful servant. I pray that we all hear that. We can all hear that from you based on how we choose to live with purpose or not. I pray that we motivate each other, that we do drive each other, and that we live a disciplined life to make much of you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. All right, any thoughts, comments? Yeah. Right. It is. Thanks for mentioning that. Did you guys hear her? Were you able to hear her? Okay. So, yeah, I mean, that's true. It is. It's a labor. It's hard. But there is joy, too. Thanks for saying that, Steph. Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's challenging. This is something, it's a daily thing. It's not like you make one decision, then you've done it. You've disciplined your life. I mean, look at the athletes. They don't feel like getting up in the morning to go train. I mean, no one's excited about that, but they've disciplined themselves to do it. Any other thoughts? All right. Thanks for listening. Again, happy Mother's Day. It's my little gift to you. I guess we'll go ahead and I'll do all.